Chapter 2. Goodbye, my house. Wednesday, July 8th, 1942. Dear Kitty, years seem to have passed between Sunday and now. So much has happened. It is just as if the whole world had turned upside down. But I am still alive, Kitty, and that is the main thing, Daddy says. Yes, I'm still alive indeed. But don't ask where or how. You wouldn't understand a word. So I will begin by telling you what happened on Sunday afternoon. At 3 o'clock, Harry had just gone but was coming back later. Someone rang the front doorbell. I was lying lazily reading a book on the veranda in the sunshine, so I didn't hear it. A bit later, Margot appeared in the kitchen door, looking very excited. "The SS have sent a call-up notice for Daddy," she whispered. "Mummy has gone to see Mr. Van Dan already." Van Dan is a friend who works with Daddy in the business. It was a great shock to me, a call-up. Everyone knows what that means. I picture concentration camps and lonely cells. Should we allow him to be doomed to this? "Of course he won't go," declared Margot while we waited together. "Mummy has gone to the Van Dans to discuss whether we should move into our hiding place tomorrow. The Van Dans are going with us, so we shall be 7 in all." Silence. We couldn't talk anymore, thinking about Daddy, who, little knowing what was going on, was visiting some old people in the Yutzi Invalid, waiting for Mummy. The heat and suspense all made us very overawed and silent. Suddenly, the bell rang again. "That is Harry," I said. "Don't open the door." Margot held me back, but it was not necessary as we heard Mummy and Mr. Van Dan downstairs talking to Harry. Then they came in and closed the door behind them. Each time the bell went, Margot or I had to creep softly down to see if it was Daddy not opening the door to anyone else. Margot and I were sent out of the room. Van Dan wanted to talk to Mummy alone. When we were alone together in our bedroom, Margot told me that the call-up was not for Daddy, but for her. I was more frightened than ever and began to cry. Margot is 16. Would they really take girls of that age away alone? But thank goodness she won't go. Mummy said so herself. That must be what Daddy meant when he talked about us going into hiding. Into hiding. Where would we go? In a town or the country? In a house or a cottage? When? How? Where? These were questions I was not allowed to ask, but I couldn't get them out of my mind. Margot and I began to pack some of her most vital belongings into a school satchel. The first thing I put in was this diary, then hair curlers, handkerchiefs, school books, a comb, old letters. I put in the craziest things with the idea that we were going into hiding. But I'm not sorry. Memories mean more to me than dresses. At 5 o'clock, Daddy finally arrived, and we phoned Mr. Kupis to ask if he could come around in the evening. Van Dan went and fetched Meep. Meep has been in the business with Daddy since 1933 and has become a close friend, likewise her brand new husband, Hank. Meep came and took some shoes, dresses, coats, underwear, and stockings away in her bag, promising to return in the evening. Then silence fell on the house. Not one of us felt like eating anything. It was still hot and everything was very strange. We let our large upstairs room to a certain Mr. Goodsmith, a divorced man in his 30s, who appeared to have nothing to do on this particular evening. We simply could not get rid of him without being rude. He hung about until 10 o'clock. At 11 o'clock, Meep and Hank Van Satten arrived. Once again, shoes, stockings, books, and underclothes disappeared into Meep's bag and Hank's deep pockets, and at 11:30, they too disappeared. I was dog-tired, and although I knew that it would be my last night in my own bed, I fell asleep immediately and didn't wake up until Mummy called me at 5:30 the next morning. Luckily, It was not so hot as Sunday. Warm rain fell steadily all day. We put on heaps of clothes, as if we were going to the North Pole, the sole reason being to take clothes with us. No Jew in our situation would have dreamed of going out with a suitcase full of clothing. I had on two vests, three pairs of pants, a dress, on top of that a skirt, jacket, summer coat, two pairs of stockings, lace-up shoes, woolly cap, scarf, and still more. I was nearly stifled before we started, but no one inquired about that. Margot filled her satchel with school books, fetched her bicycle, and rode off behind Meep into the unknown, as far as I was concerned. You see, I still didn't know where our secret hiding place was to be. At 7:30, the door closed behind us. Mirtia, my little cat, was the only creature to whom I said farewell. She would have a good home with the neighbors. This was all written in a letter addressed to Mr. Goodsmit. There was 1 pound of meat in the kitchen for the cat, breakfast things lying on the table, strip beds, all giving the impression that we had left helter-skelter. But we didn't care about impressions. We only wanted to get away, only escape and arrive safely, nothing else. Continued tomorrow. Yours, Anne. Thursday, July 9th, 1942. Dear Kitty, so we walked in the pouring rain, Daddy, Mummy, and I, each with a school satchel and shopping bag filled to the brim, with all kinds of things thrown together anyhow. We got sympathetic looks from people on their way to work. You could see by their faces how sorry they were they couldn't offer us a lift. The gaudy yellow star spoke for itself. Only when we were on the road did Mummy and Daddy begin to tell me bits and pieces about the plan. For months, as many of our goods and chattels and necessities of life as possible had been sent away, and they were sufficiently ready for us to have gone into hiding of our own accord on July 16th. The plan had had to be speeded up 10 days because of the call-up, so our quarters would not be so well organized, but we had to make the best of it. The hiding place itself would be in the building where Daddy has his office. It will be hard for outsiders to understand, but I shall explain that later on. Daddy didn't have many people working for him. Mr. Crawler, Kupis, Meep, and Ellie Vossen, a 23-year-old typist who all knew of our arrival. Mr. Vossen, Ellie's father, and two boys worked in the warehouse. They had not been told. I will describe the building. There is a large warehouse on the ground floor, which is used as a store. The front door to the house is next to the warehouse door, and inside the front door is a second doorway which leads to a staircase. A. There is another door at the top of the stairs with a frosted glass window in it, which has office written in black letters across it. That is the large main office, very big, very light, and very full. Ellie, Meep, and Mr. Kupis work there in the daytime. A small dark room containing the safe, a wardrobe, and a large cupboard leads to a small, somewhat dark second office. Mr. Crawler and Mr. Van Dan used to sit here. Now it is only Mr. Crawler. One can reach Crawler's office from the passage, but only via a glass door, which can be opened from the inside, but not easily from the outside. From Crawler's office, a long passage goes past the coal store, up 4 steps, and leads to the showroom of the whole building, the private office. Dark, dignified furniture, linoleum and carpets on the floor, radio, smart lamp, everything first class. Next door, there is a roomy kitchen with a hot water faucet and a gas stove. Next door, the WC. That is the first floor. A wooden staircase leads from the downstairs passage to the next floor, B. There is a small landing at the top. There is a door at each end of the landing, the left one leading to a storeroom at the front of the house and to the attics. One of those really steep Dutch staircases runs from the side to the other door opening onto the street, C. The right-hand door leads to our secret annex. No one would ever guess that there would be so many rooms hidden behind that plain gray door. There's a little step in front of the door, and then you are inside. There is a steep staircase immediately opposite the entrance, E. On the left, a tiny passage brings you into a room, which was to become the Frank family's bed-sitting room. Next door, a smaller room, study and bedroom for the two young ladies of the family. On the right, a little room without windows, containing the wash basin and a small WC compartment, with another door leading to Margot's and my room. If you go up the next flight of stairs and open the door, you are simply amazed that there could be such a big, light room in such an old house by the canal. There is a gas stove in this room, thanks to the fact that it was used as a laboratory and a sink. This is now the kitchen for the Van Dan couple, besides being general living room, dining room, and scullery. A tiny little corridor room will become Peter Van Dan's apartment. Then, just as on the lower landing, there is a large attic. So there you are. I've introduced you to the whole of our beautiful secret annex. Yours, Anne.